is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. The first Sunday in December of 2010. I wasn't so sure we'd see this on 1999. I thought we were all going to blow up, but here we are 10 years later, and it's a snowy Sunday. I love the snow, but I really would like to spend all winter nights in my own house this year. So please, snows like this, wonderful, send them along. Snows of 24 inches or more, let's have those as memories. An interesting topic today, and I'm looking to be informed myself. We're going to talk about depression. Our guest today, Dr. Lillian Mazzei, and we also have Lenny Carter. Dr. Mazzei, how are you?
Great.
A little closer.
Great.
Even a little closer.
Very good.
See, there we go. Adjust your chair so that you're at a comfortable spot, or adjust your microphone so that it's better for you. Dr. Lillian Mazzei, Region 10 psychiatrist. Lenny Carter, how are you, sir?
Just fine.
Even closer. You have to reduce your aura.
How's that?
That's so much better. I can turn it up a little bit on my side, too. Mr. Carter, a psychologist at Student Health Services, also titled as the Crisis Management Coordinator. What kind of crisis management is there?
Well, actually, we have a system where students can walk in during the day when they're having a mental health crisis. And then we also have night and weekend coverage via phone. So we have 24/7 availability to students. So there are quite a few crises to be managed in a community of 21,000 students.
All right. I can see that now. We are going to be talking about depression with Dr. Mazzei and with Mr. Carter. First off, difference between psychiatrists, Dr. Mazzei, and psychologist, Mr. Carter.
Well, actually, I'm licensed as a counselor. So when you look at different people who might provide mental health services, there could be licensed counselors, there could be licensed clinical psychologists, there could be licensed clinical social workers, there could be clinical nurse specialists who are actually RNs who go back and get a clinical license, and then those that gain the PhD and become psychiatrists like Dr. Mazzei.
Yeah, and psychiatrists have gone through medical school and then have chosen to go into the field of psychiatry. So we've studied the brain and the body and then have done a full psychiatry residency. So we're medical. We have medical doctor degrees. We prescribe medications in addition to psychotherapy and assessment.
All right, so we will be talking about depression today with Dr. Mazzei and with Mr. Carter, and we'll be doing this thanks to Blue Ridge Graphics. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville. They provide custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. Blue Ridge Graphics in the phone book at 296-9746, online at brgtshirts.com. And hopefully the folks in Crozet and the Valley are now listening on 101.1. We switched over to that. So happy holidays to everyone. And let's get started as we talk about happy holidays and depression. I don't know which one of our guests want to help me with this. Hopefully both. In getting ready for the program today, I was talking about depression and reminded about how large a topic that is, and I really need to add words to my vocabulary, because depression seems to cover both those individuals who suffer from clinical depression, which I'm sure I'll be informed about throughout the hour. Clinical depression includes medications, and then depression which is not clinical depression, but might be, as we get into later in the hour, holiday blues, seasonal affective disorder, but things that aren't necessarily medicated. And I need other vocabulary words so that I know and you know and listeners know which one I'm discussing.
Well, let me start. I think that's a great question, and I like to think of depression as a symptom that could be part of a clinical, more significant or severe clinical syndrome. So the word depression can mean many things, and there's a whole spectrum. And as you mentioned, people often walk around and say, oh, I'm so bummed out, I'm so depressed, I didn't do well on my test. Or the word depression could be a symptom of something a lot larger. So you have to look at all range of factors. For clinical depression, and there are lots of different kinds of clinical depression as well, generally that is a more severe syndrome that affects all parts of a person's overall functioning and life.
Yeah, I think, you know, one simple delineation is I think most people can relate to feeling depressed. And the definition I would put in there is you feel down in the dumps, you feel blue, you feel like you're not yourself. And for many people, that may last one or two or 3 days, and people can typically bounce back from that. When you move over to clinical depression, this becomes something that not only affects your functioning in a variety of ways, but it sticks around for at least a few weeks, if not much longer. And so again, I think depression is something almost everyone experiences. People can often pull themselves out of that. Again, there are several kinds of clinical depression if we want to get into that, and those are much more severe and significant for people.
And I think another thing to keep in mind is with clinical depression, there's much more than just depressed mood. It affects all different parts of a person's functioning, so things like sleep, appetite, energy. People can start having suicidal thoughts or thoughts about death and dying. It can affect one's interest in activities. It can affect one's thinking significantly, even to the extreme of having psychotic thoughts. Versus down in the dumps or having the blues, it's mainly more of just a mood issue that tends to be temporary.
But for vocabulary use, if I use the word depression, that seems to qualify everything. Is the suggestion to use the word clinical depression and to add the word clinical in there to separate the more... As someone who's never suffered from this, other than maybe a relationship breakup, when my dog Lazarus disappeared for several days, and other similar things where I was bummed out or not, you know, not myself, I know that during the hour I'm going to say something that people who understand this much better are going to think of me as being ignorant on the topic. And I say that now because it's going to happen. So do I need to add the word clinical to the word depression? Is that what separates them for our discussion through the hour? And for people who are listening to understand which part of the topic we're discussing?
I think that's there's probably not an easy answer to that question. I think if you were to be clinically accurate, you might say major depression, or I suffer from bipolar disorder or bipolar depression, clinical depression. So I think what you're talking about is in everyday use. If a friend tells you they're depressed, how are you going to interpret that?
Yeah, or just, hey, I'm suffering, you know, I suffer from depression. Well, at what level on the scheme are we talking about so that I understand what my guests are saying better, and I understand where we are in the box of discussion about this?
Well, I think if you want to drill down a little further, so you have the everyday depression that people might have for 1 or 2 days, and then you get over on the clinical side, and I would spell out probably at least 3 or 4 categories there. So you might start with an adjustment disorder, which may go for up to 6 months, and this is really what it sounds like. So you're adjusting to something. You may be adjusting to the loss of a relationship. You may be adjusting to losing your job. You may be adjusting to moving several states away, and you become depressed in adjustment in reaction to the situation. So there's one sort of relatively mild form of clinical depression that we delineate. Dr. Mazet has already talked about major depression, so she listed out several of these symptoms: feeling sad, changes in sleep, changes in appetite, changes in thinking, changes in self-image, suicidal thoughts at times. What else am I leaving out?
Feelings of worthlessness, feelings of guilt, significant fatigue, or physical aches and pains, headaches, stomach aches, those kinds of things.
So you can see from that long list of symptoms, what we look for is about five of those symptoms that somebody might experience every day for 2 weeks. And then that would put the person over into an area of major depression. Now, there's still a couple of other kinds of depression, too, unless you want to stop there.
I'm thinking about people who suffer for years. People who take medication who've been taking medication for a decade or two or more. And this is an everyday part of their life. This isn't a relationship change. This isn't moving away. This isn't a job problem. This is what they have. And this is what they deal with. And it's from, you know, wake up one day till you wake up the next, and you know that you're going to be doing this for the rest of your life, or that's the expectation.
That's probably a good segue into the next category, which is called dysthymia. And the definition of dysthymia is this is a long and grinding depression of at least 2 years. And again, there's a lot of the symptoms that we've just talked about, but there's also symptoms such as irritability and low self-esteem. So you can see somebody who may have a long and grinding depression, which is a little bit less severe, and then they may have episodes of major depression on top of that, and we call that double depression. So you're right. Some people do have to live with this, and it goes on and on and on. The last category of depression I would lay out there is sort of a category almost, you know, in between everyday depression and clinical depression, where somebody may have two or three or four out of those symptoms that we laid out. So they may have problems with sleep. They may have problems with appetite, but they may not have sort of the full extent there, and that's called depression not otherwise specified. And the kicker for that one is the symptoms that they're having have to significantly affect several areas of functioning in their life.
And I have another comment also I think that might speak to your question. I'm wondering if some of what you're getting at may be related to the stigma of having a mental illness.
Certainly.
Where it's okay to say I'm depressed. It's okay to say I'm bummed out. It's okay to say I'm having a rough time.
Everybody is familiar with that.
But it's maybe not okay to label it properly. You might be socializing with friends and say, you know, I've had a heart attack, or I have diabetes, but it's not okay to say I have bipolar disorder with depression. It's not okay to say I have major depressive disorder. So people, maybe the term depression has just gotten thrown around more broadly because somehow it's somehow more acceptable to say the word depression and not label the clinical syndrome properly, which differentiates between different illnesses.
I would agree with that 100%. The word depression seems to have taken on a less deadly is the word that comes to mind, although we haven't, that's not necessarily the stigma to attach to it, but it seems to be a much softer word than it might have been in the past, because everyone suffers from depression at some form in their life if it's inclusive of having a bad day. And so I am having trouble breaking the two apart, but I love the use of the word dysthymia, because to me, okay, now I have something else to work here. I can understand the word dysthymia, it's a separate word. It doesn't include depression. It's not depression or major depression or clinical depression. Dysthymia, now I have a separately named disease. Is that the proper word to use here?
Illness.
Illness. Thank you. All right. Well, let's keep going on. I feel like I spent the first quarter of the show helping myself and hopefully others who are having similar misunderstandings of how to approach the topic on a general level with people that you know in conversation or in any other way of learning. Sunday morning wake-up call, we are talking about depression as an overall topic. Lenny Carter, a counselor at Student Health Services, UVA, Dr. Lillian Mazzei from a Region 10 psychiatrist. We talked a little bit about symptoms for depression, and we seem to talk about causes in a minor way, breakups, moving, and other sort of major changes in life. But also for the physical part of things, what are causes of depression or dysthymia, clinical depression that lead to physical challenges?
In terms of causes, it seems to be depression and other mood disorders seem to be strongly genetic. So one can inherit the vulnerability towards depression. It doesn't necessarily mean that you automatically become depressed or develop major depression in your life, but it definitely is, the vulnerability can definitely be inherited. So if you have a parent or a sibling with major depression, you're at much higher risk of developing depression.
So genetic.
Mm-hmm.
It's a genetic disorder, can be a genetic disorder.
And that's not the full story, because twin studies have shown with identical twins that there may be, if one identical twin has major depression, the other identical twin has about a 75% risk of developing major depression, which shows it's not all genetics. So other risk factors could include stressors, trauma, childhood traumas or traumas later in life, major stressors, substance abuse could precipitate major depression in people who are vulnerable. Medical illnesses, I think you alluded to that. So if people have had a stroke or a heart attack or Parkinson's disease or other neurological illnesses, they can then develop depression. And there seems to be a physical, not just the stress of having a major illness, but there also seems with some of those illnesses to be physical factors, especially with brain illnesses such as Parkinson's.
You know, I think the other interesting thing I would just add on to that briefly is the interaction between genetics and environment and stressors. So we see some people, there's a few studies out there to indicate some people seem to be very resilient. So you can hit them with a number of stressors, tough situations, tough stressors, and they don't get depressed until maybe they hit the fourth or the fifth or the sixth tough situation. Other people are more vulnerable. They're hit with one or two stressors, and they become depressed immediately. So often these factors interact.
11:20 here on the Wake Up Call with our guest today, Lenny Carter, counselor at UVA Student Health Services, psychiatrist Dr. Lillian Mazzei from Region 10, as we talk about depression. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. It's partly sunny today with lots of winds, high 34 to 39, lower 40s over in Richmond. Clear but windy tonight, lows in the low 20s. Partly sunny and windy tomorrow, highs in the mid-30s. Right now it's nice across the listening area with the wind blowing 36 in the valley, 35 in Lynchburg, 37 in Richmond, 36 here in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank Dixon Disposal for their support today. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come. When Dixons picks up your trash, they sort it and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. You can find them online at DixonDisposal.com, 978-2111. And hopefully you know the 23rd annual Toy Lift is history, and WNRN would like to thank the thousands of folks across Central Virginia who contributed a toy, a book, a bike, or even made a cash donation for the child's Christmas a little brighter this year. With your help, the Toy Lift collected over 10,500 toys, 8,400 books, and $40,000 in donations, and they're still counting. If you didn't get around to contributing, you still can at toylift.org. Everybody at the Kids Toy Lift Foundation and WNRN thanks you for your support of this year's Toy Lift. All right, back in action with our conversation on depression, Dr. Mazet and Mr. Carter here in the studio. Call us up if you have a question or a comment, 979-0919, the toll-free number if needed, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. And there must be listeners who suffer from one form of depression or another, because from what I understand, the prevalence of depression is an awful lot. And is it increasing?
Well, yes, you're right. The prevalence is quite high. In general, major depression affects almost 10% of the population in a given year. For women, during their lifetimes, a woman would have a 10 to 25% risk of experiencing a major depression during their lifetime. So that's very high. That's up to a quarter of women. For men, it's less. 5 to 12% of men might experience a major depressive episode during their lifetime.
And the World Health Organization has weighed in and said that this is actually the most common medical disorder in the world, is depression, clinical depression.
And in the United States, major depression, or depression in general, is the number one in terms of disease burden.
What disease burden?
Mm-hmm. So that would
explain that to the jargony word to me.
Well, that would include not only the financial cost of depression and depression treatment, but lost time at work, lost productivity. It would include the effects on families, family breakups, suicide. There are a whole lot of things that go into that.
Yeah, so let me jump on the soapbox for 1 second. I mean, I think, again, I'm very appreciative of you having this show, because it's my belief that this is really the number one public health issue in the United States, and yet it's not talked about. I think the amount of research is inadequate. But again, when you look at the prevalence, when you look at the cost to society and individuals, I would argue it's the number one public health issue in the U.S.
Well, let's take our first call. Let's see, we have Paul from Howardsville. Hi, Paul.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks. You got a question or a comment on
both. Let me make a comment. I'm a health coach, and I believe that with the state of our water, you know, the brain is 90% water when we're born, and it dries out. As we dehydrate, you know, it's harder for the blood flow to work, et cetera, et cetera. And our water is full of dangerous stuff, you know. I'll go as far as to say that fluoride is dangerous. Read the research. You know, if the FDA did its job, you know, and they told everybody what's in the water, and drinking acid stuff like soda pop and beer from aluminum cans, you know, acid material etches aluminum out of them cans, and it deposits it in your organs. Your brain and your skin, et cetera, are all organs.
All right, so what's your question?
I'm making a comment.
I understand
I believe that if in the other part of The problem we got, this public health problem, is there's only two countries in the world where Big Pharma can direct market their product to the general public. That's the United States and New Zealand. Nowhere else in the world does that happen.
All right, Paul, time to move on to the question.
Well, I'm asking these doctors if that's a contributing factor.
All right. Thanks, doctors.
Well, I think you bring up a good point. I think mental health is very, very closely tied into our physical health in a lot of different ways, and I think it's very important that we pay attention to our physical health. I think the callers brought up environmental and pollution questions, and I think there are probably factors we don't fully understand yet regarding our clean air and clean water that could affect our physical and our mental health. And then I would go on to say it is important in terms of staying healthy and combating depression to pay attention to our physical health in all different realms, exercise, proper nutrition, and trying to avoid ingestion of toxic substances if possible, including drugs and alcohol.
And one of the things I often talk about people when they're depressed is their sort of common sense when it comes to diet and health sometimes goes out the window. So when you feel depressed, sometimes it really looks better to drink a beer or drink a couple of liters of Dr. Pepper as opposed to maybe taking a healthier approach to things like diet.
All right, Howard, Paul, thanks so much. Your call from Howardsville. Don't forget, you can go on to www.seavillepodcast.com. We will record this program and put it up on SeavillePodcast.com. And, Paul, you can make a comment, which includes a link to some of the information that you are sharing. Thanks so much. 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. If you have a question or a comment for our guest today, Dr. Lillian Mazzei, Region 10 psychiatrist, Lenny Carter, a counselor at Student Health Services. We were talking about depression in its variety of ways, from having a bad day to suffering clinical depression, all the way up to what seemed to me to be even a harder version of that with dysthymia. But one of the reasons that this program came to my mind to do today is the holidays. The holidays get much more discussion about people feeling depressed, having trouble getting through the days because they can't match up to the feeling that you're supposed to have about happy holidays and all the fun that goes into it. And I wanted to talk about that for a minute. It's certainly not the physical version that it seems to be with clinical depression, but how do the holidays relate to depression in general?
Well, that's a great question. I think one of the primary stressors with the holidays is unmet expectations for the holidays. So we have very idealized images of how we expect our family gatherings and other holiday events to proceed, and a lot of times they don't go exactly or even close to what we've imagined. So I think that's one primary factor. Also, holidays in a lot of ways can be quite stressful in terms of shopping, the parties, maybe not getting enough sleep, being overscheduled. Financial stressors, so people, if they're already struggling financially and there's expectations for buying gifts, that can be a problem. People who don't have necessarily the most satisfying relationship with family, that they're expected to maybe spend a lot of time with those family members, that can be quite stressful.
What about the person or the family that has some sort of negative thought attachment to the holiday times? I know folks who have lost a relative during this time or had a serious emotional relationship with a parent or with someone else that has the negative attachment to this time, how do you help that person? Suggestions, and realize we're here in a 60-minute conversation. What should those people begin to do to possibly change that, if do anything at all?
It's certainly something that I talk with my clients about very frequently, because we live in a society where, you know, when does Christmas start? Does it start in July? Does it start after Thanksgiving? It starts very early, and we're all expected to kind of come along with this and enjoy this. And I think in reality, there's a lot of folks out there that do have a lot of negative feelings about Christmas. And I certainly tell my clients it's okay to feel that way. It's okay to express those feelings. But again, if you're at a holiday party with a group of friends, it may be difficult for people to sort of talk about those things openly.
And you know, in human nature, if we're sad about something or sad in our lives, it's unrealistic to expect that magically over the holiday season that feeling will go away. And I think there is sometimes that sort of magical thinking that one isn't supposed to feel sad or depressed at all during the Christmas season, and that's just not realistic. You had mentioned maybe having lost a loved one and maybe the holidays bringing that feeling up.
Right, that's sort of the negative anniversary of that. Mm-hmm. And the expectation is that there aren't any negative feelings around the holidays. It's the time when everyone's supposed to be happy and celebrating.
Mm-hmm. And so some tips for maybe for that is it's okay to maybe, and it's probably a good thing, when you to get together and talk about that person, the person you've lost, and talk about your memories, and maybe even do something to commemorate that person, light a candle, or if they had a favorite dish that they always loved over Christmas, maybe include that dish in your celebration. And instead of maybe ignoring the fact that all of you are sad about or thinking about this person.
11:33 here on the Wake Up Call, as we talk about depression and its many types, many forms of depression, I've decided is what I needed to learn, and one of many things throughout the hour. Our guests, Lenny Carter and Dr. Lillian Mazay, please feel free to call up, make your comment, ask your question, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. We are here because of support coming from businesses like The Backyard, University's Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue across from Para Coffee. The Backyard invites you to enjoy outdoor patio seating in their heated tent and try their winter menu. The Backyard has seasonal brews on tap and is available for private events. For more info, the phone line is 202-8215, or you can find The Backyard on Facebook. Also want to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. They are now featuring the Columbia Omni Heat, a waterproof down jacket with 700 fill power to provide protection from wet and cold weather. Columbia Omni Heat jackets are available at Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, the outdoor store that knows the outdoors. How young in age can you see signs of clinical depression? Because we always have thoughts about, oh, the teenagers wearing the, you know, dye their hair black and, you know, walk down the mall. Sort of the, you know, teenagers are easily depressed in whatever form you want to take it. Caller, hang on. Go ahead.
Well, depression can start in childhood. It's sometimes harder to recognize in younger children who may not be able to articulate their feelings of sadness.
When you say childhood, what age range are we talking about? Toddlers, elementary school kids, or, you know, preteens, teenagers? What are we talking about?
Well, there are some studies. People are studying depression in as young as toddler age children.
And now we're talking about the physical kind, or are we still talking about the emotional, you know, what range are we talking about? Dysthymia? Are we talking about clinical depression? Are we talking about having a bad day depression?
Well, that's difficult to discern, and I think some clinical depressive illnesses, which end up becoming significant lifelong problems, can start early on. And I think the difficulty is discerning that when a child is young. Is this something that is going to end up becoming a major lifelong illness, or is it something that's temporary? And that's hard to discern in younger, especially in younger children. Depression in children can show up in more in irritability and anger, anger outbursts, crying, difficulty sleeping, change in appetite, so more physical manifestations, as they may not be able to articulate mood issues. It's a controversial topic. Depression in children is quite a controversial topic, especially when you start talking about medication treatment in young children, and that's a topic of a lot of interest and study right now.
And just a very quick comment on adolescent depression. 30 to 40 years ago, it was very much under-recognized. It was just thought it was part of a phase. It was just thought it was moodiness. Now, with the research that we have over the last 20 years, we realize this is actually a period in life where depression is probably more common than in other age groups. So we've really shifted our thinking about adolescent depression in the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And especially if there is a strong family history of mood disorder, and you're going to pay more attention to a child developing what looks like depression, because as we already talked about, the genetic predisposition to depression. And especially if the child stops wanting to go to school, starts missing classes, starts a child who used to be interested in friends or activities, and starts isolating and showing disinterest in things they used to be interested in, really affecting their whole life, can be quite significant.
All right, we have a caller. Caller, are you still with me?
Is this me?
Yes, it is. This is you. Question.
Yeah, I have
or
a quick comment. I've suffered long-term depression for about like 2 years, and I recovered from it. One thing that's not emphasized enough is the degree of pain when you suffer severe clinical depression. It's like you're completely disoriented. Like when I first encountered it, it was a little bit like drinking like a bottle and a half of wine or two bottles of wine. I was that disoriented, and it was like having, you know, the pain was like 10 or 50 headaches. It was extreme pain. And I think some of the suicidal thoughts are linked to the extreme pain. You're just uncomfortable living. So that's just a comment that, and I have a question. Have there been any studies done on the likelihood of children suffering major depression, maybe later in their life or early in life, if the parents have have a familial history of depression or have suffered it themselves, and they go through a divorce?
Well, in terms of the, first of all, I want to thank you for your comment. I think that's absolutely right, and I think a lot of the general public do not understand how painful true clinical major depression can be, and don't understand why people can't just snap out of it. And the changes in thinking and severe deep hopelessness and feelings of worthlessness can often lead to suicide. And I think people don't understand just how painful that can be. So thank you for that. If a parent has a major mood disorder, such as major depression, a child is, I believe, up to three times more likely to develop a clinical depressive syndrome during their life. I don't know the statistics on divorce.
Yeah, I don't have the exact statistics either. I know there certainly are, a couple of handfuls of studies out there that have looked at the effect of early loss. So that could be losing a parent early in life and making somebody vulnerable to later mental health problems. And then the divorce studies have also indicated the same type of thing, that if there's a divorce early in the child's life, there is some degree of vulnerability to developing things like depression and anxiety disorders later on in life. It's a little bit of what we call a sleeper effect. So there may be a divorce at 5, and then the person may actually develop these problems at 20 or 30 years of age. So there is an increased risk there.
Okay, thank you.
And I think to get back to the original comment that you made about pain, I really appreciate that comment. There was a term coined probably about 60 years ago by a guy named Ed Schneidman, who was one of the early researchers on suicide, and he called it psychache, which I thought is such a great word for what some people experience. So some people experience a lot of physical pain with depression, but if you think about it as severe psychological pain, I think that's really a very important concept that you're touching on.
In preparing for the program, I had someone tell me that they don't necessarily believe in heaven, but suffering from dysthymia, they know that there is hell. Mm-hmm. All right, 11:42 here on the wake-up call. Phone lines are open, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Guests today, Dr. Lillian Mazzei, a Region 10 psychiatrist, and Lenny Carter, a counselor at UVA's Student Health Services.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
And this week, The Hook looks at the recent shopping days, pictures and stories from shopping's Black Friday. Starlight Express, the simple and straight to New York City bus service out of Charlottesville, has a new owner. And does Charlottesville have a tourist trap parking lot? Plenty of folks think so through their complaints. The Hook, locally owned and operated. And support today also coming from Sugar Snap. They offer gently used baby and kids items, including shoes and hats, plus maternity and nursing clothes. Also at Sugar Snap, you'll find cloth diapers, nursery gear, and locally made items. They have a kid-friendly play area, and you can become a fan of Sugar Snap on Facebook or Twitter. You'll find them in the Shoppers World Court here in Charlottesville online. It's sugarsnapconsignment.com. Back with our guests, Mr. Carter and Dr. Mazzei, and now we have Peggy from Lynchburg. Hi, Peggy.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. Comments or questions for our guests?
Yes, I had a question regarding the seasonal the seasonal affective disorder with regard to the loss of light in the winter months. And I've heard some research done about the, 10,000 lux lights that you can get, and I wondered what the guest's opinion is on that.
Yeah, thank you for your question. Seasonal affective disorder is a pattern where someone tends to become depressed in the winter months, and it's thought to be partly related to changes in light. It tends not to occur in people living near the equator. And light, the thought is that the loss of light in the winter months affects different brain chemicals, including melatonin and serotonin, which can affect mood. So light therapy can be used and can be quite effective. And the idea is to buy the bright light, such as you described, and you sit in front of the light, a couple of feet away from the light, and in the mornings, and you can you titrate the time that you sit in front of the light, and the light is then thought to stimulate serotonin production and improve your mood. It's important to work with a doctor in doing this, at least initially. One risk would be if a person has bipolar disorder, which may be undiagnosed, and they start sitting in front of the bright light, it could precipitate what we would call a manic episode or an elevation of mood above normal.
This was also in the news indirectly this week in terms of arguing among professionals about what the recommended level of vitamin D should be. Vitamin D is absorbed from the sun. It doesn't necessarily come up frequently in our diet, which is why milk and orange juice is fortified by vitamin D. So there's arguments over how much is enough, and again, looking at studies that are linking low levels of vitamin D with higher incidence of depression.
Right, and so in addition to the Bright Light box, it's also very effective, and this also brings in the vitamin D, is to actually go outside. Go outside in the mornings, get some natural sunlight, and that can be very effective, and we should all be doing that more often anyway.
One of the things that I had read in catching up some information on seasonal affective disorder is it wasn't just light, but some doctors say that it's also body temperature. And that's why it tends to be winter, so that it's not just around folks who don't get enough light even during other months of the year. Is that true? Any thoughts on that?
That's interesting. I've never heard that. I can't comment on that.
Well, I go to weird websites. So. All right. Thank you, Peggy, very much.
Thank you.
All right, 11:47 on the wake-up call. You are welcome to call in with your question or comment, 979-0919. I see that ringing now. You can also use the toll-free line, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS.
Could I make a comment?
Always.
The second caller who called in who talked about how painful depression can be and then how he's now in recovery, I think that brings up a really important point in that depression is quite a treatable illness. When you're in the middle of it, in the midst of it, you often feel very hopeless, and you don't see options for a better future, and you may become severely suicidal. So what that brings up is the importance of, even if you're feeling that way, to seek treatment. And in terms of treatment providers and what friends and family can do, one of our major roles is to try to instill hope in people that they can get better, and to engage in treatment and stick with treatment.
And I would just jump in and say, the analogy I like to use is thinking about suicide is much like having a high fever. It indicates something serious is wrong, and it's really quite important to go get help and attend to that.
I want to come back to this, but we have a call.
Hello?
Hello. Question or comment for our guests?
Comment. I just had to call. My father died when I was 15. I'm 53 now. And when I was about 19 years old, I went to the doctor because I'm like, doctor, I'm on top of the world. Life is good, but I can't stop crying, and I don't understand why. Well, you know, it was depression, and I've been treated I've had it all my adult life. And in retrospect, I think it was caused by my father's death. And he died actually 8 days after Christmas, went in the hospital Christmas Eve. I've had years where I did not treat my depression, and it's suffering. I mean, it's just not worth it. And now, actually, about 4 years ago, I started going to the chiropractor, and after a few months of chiropractic care, I noticed that my antidepressants didn't seem to be working as well, and I also came upon a book called Cure Insomnia, Obesity, and Depression with 5-HTP, and to make a long story short, I'm now on 5-HTP and a couple thousand milligrams of vitamin D3 every day, and it treats my depression. And keeps me hanging on. It's a little worse in the winter, but I just upped my 5-HTP a little bit, and I'm good to go.
Who wants to take this? Because I'm completely unfamiliar with this from any of my homework.
Yeah, I'm not sure what she's referring to in terms of 5-HTP.
Actually, what that does is it stimulates, if I'm not mistaken, it stimulates the production of neurotransmitters like serotonin and norepinephrine. So it has an action that's actually similar to that of antidepressants. Mm-hmm. I'm not as familiar with D3, are you?
Well, that's the vitamin D, yeah.
Okay.
And the jury's still out on that. But that she brings up a great point. There are a lot of alternative and complementary treatments for depression that are offered in different health food stores that are being looked at and studied, and some have good support behind them, some have less good support, but I think the jury's still out. I think a lot more work needs to be done on looking at these different options.
Well, caller, thanks. And it seems that as long as you feel better and that you have a doctor who tells you that this is working, best of luck.
Well, yeah, and that brings up a good point. It's important to let your doctor know what you are taking, that you're getting over the counter at a health food store, to make sure that it's not dangerous or toxic, or that if you are also on prescribed medications, that there's not an adverse interaction.
All right. 979-0919 again, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. I'm not sure which of you referred to this. I think it was Dr. Mazet who called depression a treatable disorder. I'd like to get the difference between disorder and disease and treatable versus manageable.
Well,
you smiled at each other like I asked the dirty question or something.
Well, I don't know that there's really a distinction between disorder and disease. I certainly didn't mean to make a distinction. In terms of treatable and manageable, as with all illnesses, some people respond fully to treatment and the illness may remit and the symptoms may all go away and the person may be able to stop their medications. Some illnesses, and I would liken this to diabetes or high blood pressure, can be very well managed, and as long as you stay on in treatment or manage it in other ways, you may not have any adverse impact. So if you have diabetes and you take the medications regularly, you may be able to sustain normal blood sugar throughout your life. And so you manage it that way. Now, it doesn't mean you can stop your medications and the illness process goes away, but you can manage it to where it's not affecting your life, your overall physical health, your functioning, or longevity.
Yeah, I think the treatment of depression is a fascinating topic, because you see some individuals who don't seek treatment and some just spontaneously get better. Then you look at the treatments that we have available. If you look at severe depression, the research is pointing out that for severe forms of depression, probably the most effective treatment is some form of psychotherapy or counseling, as well as some form of medication, which I think is quite interesting, because when you look at brain chemistry, if you think about counseling and psychotherapy, you're really talking about the front part of the brain, the frontal cortex, where people are making decisions. What should I do? Should I get out of bed? Should I call somebody for lunch? When you're looking at medications, often those affect sort of this older part of the brain in the back. So this may help people sort of manage their emotions better. So that's probably why these two forms of treatment together are more effective than either by itself for severe forms of treatment.
So we're talking about medical versus, what was my note here? Medical versus talkative treatment.
Well, and actually, we're learning that that's really a false distinction. Some really fascinating studies have been done in people who have depression or anxiety, who have undergone what we would a form of therapy called cognitive behavioral therapy. And the brain scans have shown changes in their brains very similar to brain changes that occur when people take antidepressants. So talk therapy can actually cause physical changes in the brain that can help move someone towards health. It's really fascinating.
We have another caller. We have Ronnie from Lynchburg. Hi, Ronnie.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
We're well. Question or comment for Dr. Zay?
I have a question, and y'all may have covered this already. I turned on the phone just about 15 minutes ago. Radio. Have y'all talked about depression and television?
No, you know, we haven't, but I was sitting here thinking moments ago about how lighthearted depression seems to be when viewed on television.
And I guess the comments that I'd have that I'd love for y'all to address is, as somebody said earlier, that depression is maybe the number one illness we have going on. I think TV can contribute a whole lot to that. We watch it, we see how we're supposed to look, we see how we're supposed to be happy, and it sort of, in my opinion, creates a false sense of reality. And then you watch it, and what do you do when you're watching it? Well, you're sitting there eating. And one of y'all talked about eating, and when you're depressed, you kind of choose the wrong foods, and it sort of just all goes on top of itself. And so I was wondering if there were any studies on how much TV somebody watches and how happy they are.
I don't know of any studies, but what you say makes a lot of sense. I think there are a lot of idealized images, and this also brings up what we were talking about with the holidays, idealized images in the media of how our lives should be, and our lives often usually don't meet those expectations. But also what you were talking about is our sedentary lifestyles. People who are depressed do tend to crave carbohydrates. And the importance of getting up off the couch, engaging in activities, not isolating, getting outside, getting exercise, not snacking all day. All those things are, you know, health-related activities that really can protect us against depression or assist in treating depression.
Yeah, I think the caller's raising a good point because, again, many of us have a sedentary lifestyle because of our work. So then if you combine that with a lot of TV watching, then you do have a very low activity level. And there are studies that indicate that people who exercise at least 20 minutes a week, three times a week, vigorously, that they actually get an antidepressant effect, similar to that from taking an antidepressant medication. So we do know that exercise is a moderately powerful antidepressant.
All right, Ronnie, thanks for the call.
Thank you all.
And I would encourage people over the holidays to continue to exercise and keep up your exercise regimen. That often gets lost when we're traveling or going to parties or spending a lot of time shopping or cooking. So I would encourage people to continue with their exercise plan.
11:58 on the wake-up calls. We finish up our conversation about depression. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Our guests today, Dr. Lillian Mazet, a psychiatrist at Region 10, and Lenny Carter, a counselor at UVA's Student Health Services. You know, there's really time for just the most minute bit of chat left, but how do you, as it seems like our society is increasing, whether it's the water, whether it's the television, or wherever the forces are coming from, you can exercise, was mentioned, but what do you do from the inside going out to do your best to not fall into this category?
Well, I think there are a variety of things. I mean, the first thing I would think about is first of all, know where to get help. So there's Region 10 Community Services, which is the local community mental health center. People can get help from their family doctor, from their minister. So I think it's important for people to know the resources in the community. In terms of what people can do internally, I think the idea of the healthy lifestyle, the idea of proper exercise, proper diet, and then also we realize that social and interpersonal relationships are important. So I think, you know, the idea of making new friends and keeping the old, I think these are all, I think, ideas that fit together with good health.
And continuing to be engaged in your community, finding something meaningful to you to engage in on a regular basis, maybe helping others, that can be a very powerful antidepressant effect.
All right. Finishing up our conversation with Lenny Carter and Dr. Lillian Mazet, thank you so much for participating today.
You're welcome.
If you are interested in making a comment, don't forget cvillepodcast.com. We will have this program up in a short time, and you can go on there and make a comment about the program or the topic in the program. Next week, we'll be talking about sleep and sleep disorders. I've just got all this stuff going on. And then the week after that, Santa will visit and we'll call all the kids. Hopefully Santa won't have too many disorders. Thank you both.
You're welcome.
Les Timms-Perdue up next.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.